Good morning, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Thursday, the 19th of April. The simple truth about the gender pay gap was released just in the last few days from the American Association of University Women. The report says that women in this country earned 77% of what men earned in 2010. Tuesday was Equal Pay Day, started in 1966 by the National Committee on Pay Equity to call attention to the gap between men and women's wages. We've been looking at this issue for a long time. You might be interested in where women are faring well and where they are not doing very well. Gender pay gap was smallest in Washington, D.C., where full-time working women earned 91% of what men earned. Vermont and California were second. The largest disparities were in Wyoming, where women earned 64% of what men did, and Louisiana, where they earned 67%. And you're interested, I'm sure, in what's going on in Wisconsin. It was 75% here in the state of Wisconsin. The gap in median weekly income was largest for Hispanic and Latina women, who earned only 61% of what white men earn. So what's going on with all of this? Is it a story of women entering the workforce and then being penalized because they're out of the workforce to raise children? But that wouldn't explain why right off the bat, out of college, women are making 5% less than what men are making, and 10 years out of college, they're making substantially less than that. Lisa Matz is our guest this hour, Director of Public Policy and Government Relations at the American Association of University Women. Pay equity is a big issue for this organization. She's been there since 2003. AAUW has been around since 1881. She has provided leadership to the Paycheck Fairness Act Coalition, and all of her work on this began when she was Executive Director of Turning Point, a battered women's program. She also does work for the now Legal Defense Fund and Education Fund, the Older Women's League. She was a legislative aide to U.S. Congresswoman Carolyn Maloney. She was raised by a single mom, Lisa was, and so she got an interest in current events from her mom because her mom was interested in current events. And her mom is a retired nurse who joined AAUW. We'll be welcoming phone calls. This has become a somewhat controversial issue in the state of Wisconsin, as I'm sure you know, because the equal pay law in Wisconsin was repealed on Tuesday of this week. Those who are concerned about equal pay and the possibility of going to state court to appeal discrimination based on pay is that there are a number of people who are filing suit that are not legitimate. So we will talk about that. And we'll welcome your phone calls. I think we'll have quite a few on this topic. Our number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Our email address is talk@wpr.org. talk@wpr.org. Lisa, hello. Thank you so much for being with us.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
I think we'll have an interesting hour. I am amazed how long AAUW has been working on this issue and how it remains a fairly persistent problem in this country. Why has it gone on for so long?
Well, you know, it's interesting because, you know, AAUW, as you said, founded back in 1881. I like to think of our founders as kind of the original uppity women because they had the nerve back in 1881 to not only have college degrees, but think that maybe other women should get them too, and then to actually be able to use them fruitfully in their communities. So they really thought, I think, that if women got educated, the pay gap would close. And we really see now that women are the majority on college campuses. That happened sometime in the 70s and into the 80s. And so, you know, we kind of did what we were told. We got an education and thought that that would level the playing field. And now we've had not only a couple of decades of good educational records, but also equal pay legislation or statutes on the books, and we're still not being paid fairly. So it's obviously become clear that it's much more about it's much less about what you bring to the table and much more about kind of the cultural stereotypes about women workers, about women as mothers, and the assumptions that are made as a result.
When you look at the pay gap, it's substantial between white women and white men. When you go to Hispanic and Latina women, it really is a huge pay gap. Why is that?
It really is. Part of this is because of the kind of work and job segregation that women do. Most women today, even with our good record at school, tend to be clustered in just a few job categories. We're teachers, we're nurses, we're secretaries, we're administrative aides, we're cooks and cleaners, and so on and so forth. And so when you look at those kinds of jobs, even if they're very valuable to society, like teachers and nurses, they still don't necessarily make a lot of money. And when you then are talking about cleaners and people working in restaurants and that kind of stuff, it's even worse. Mm-hmm. So I would imagine, though, there too we're talking about kind of the intersection of not just sexism but racism too, in terms of how folks are paid.
When you look at law schools, when you look at medical schools, my understanding is that they're over 50% female. Do you notice a different kind of pay equity in those professions?
Well, it's interesting there because there is a different kind of pay equity. It's absolutely true that the more educated you get and the higher up the ladder you go, the more money a woman will make. That's absolutely true. What is fascinating, though, is that the farther up the food chain you get, the bigger the pay gap it will be. So, in other words, you know, if you have a minimum wage worker at McDonald's, that's a minimum wage worker at McDonald's, whether it's a man or a woman. But once you start to get educated and start to move up that food chain and hopefully breaking some or putting some cracks in the glass ceiling, then we actually see even bigger gaps. You can see it in CEOs. You can see it at the state level. We just had a situation with a governor out west who it was very clear that he was paying his male cabinet members more than his female cabinet members, despite the fact that the women had more experience and more responsibilities in terms of their various cabinet assignments. So it's interesting because, yes, you get a premium if you get an education. You get a premium if you move up the ladder, but you're also going to see an even bigger gap.
And if you ask that governor why the pay disparity, his answer would likely be?
Well, he didn't want to answer it, but if we use what I think is the honest answer, which came from actually one of your state's state senators when they repealed the Wisconsin law, he said that probably, you know, it could be argued that men just need money more than women, which, you know, just left women around the world scratching their heads, I think, and probably women in Wisconsin hopping mad. But, you know, there is this stereotype somehow that men are the breadwinners, and therefore you can pay women less as a result, or you can favor men. But the reality is that two-thirds of households in this country right now have women as co-bread earners. In other words, they couldn't make ends meet if they didn't have both the husband and the wife working. And that obviously doesn't take into account all the single moms out there who are not going home to rely on the wages of a partner. She's got to do it all on her own. So, yeah, I think we're still in some respects in a 1960s mentality, not just with this issue, but lots of other issues that we've seen come to light, the contraception issue and so forth. It feels a little bit like we're trying to regress to Mad Men stuff for those of you who like the television show, but all it's doing is leaving a lot of mad women.
It's interesting when you look at the median wage in this country, that it's $36,931 for women, this is in 2010, and $47,715 for men.
Yeah, it really tends to open your eyes, doesn't it? Even this early in the morning, it makes you say, what? Wait, could you read that number again? It's that big of a gap, but it's true.
It is a big gap. What you hear frequently is that women go out of the workforce to raise their children, and when they re-enter, they would naturally be at a lower wage because men have been in the workforce plugging away for all those years.
Yeah, you know, I think that is something that we need to take into account. I mean, obviously, we're reasonable people here, and there are all kinds of reasons why someone might make less than the next person. Maybe you supervise less people, you have less experience, you have less education. But the reality is that, number one, there are a lot of women who never leave the workplace. Let's just be clear about that, right? Because that choice to stay home is a very difficult choice and one that is laden with all kinds of financial issues. And a lot of families simply just can't make that choice. Number two, I always like to talk about that in terms of, is it really a choice? So, you know, husband and wife sit down. They say, maybe we would like to have somebody stay home with the kids because those are our values and that's what we'd like to do, and we think we can afford it. So who are we going to have stay home? Well, of course you're going to have the person stay home that makes less money.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, in some respects it's a choice, but it's also constrained by other factors that in some respects are, you know, overshadowed by potential discrimination. So, you know, the other thing I would say about that, by the way, too, is that if it's really about motherhood, if it's really just that, well, you become a parent, and because you become a parent, we think you're not going to be as reliable, or you're not going to be willing to travel, or you won't stay late, or whatever stereotype it is, so we're going to pay you less as a result, because you're just not as worthwhile as an employee. But what's fascinating is that when women have a kid, it shows very clearly in the data that their earnings go down. But when men have a kid, their earnings go up. So there's really clearly a value system being employed with kind of the wage scales. And you got to remember, these wage scales are implemented by human beings with their own thoughts and stereotypes and visions for what the world should be. And clearly, we're rewarding women, or rewarding men for having kids, but punishing women if they choose to have kids and continue to work.
The Equal Pay Act of 1963 was signed into law by John F. Kennedy. This is almost 50 years ago. Hasn't there been recourse for women because of that Pay Act over the past 50 years?
We've had some improvement. But I would say, you know, that act was actually signed before the landmark 1964 Civil Rights Act.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that we've actually been trying to do legislatively is to actually update the 1963 Equal Pay Act, because after 1963, we kind of got a better sense about how to do civil rights laws in terms of what kind of deterrents to use, how to litigate them if it comes to that. And the Equal Pay Act is kind of an anachronism in that sense. So we've been trying to get Congress to actually update it, because it hasn't been touched, as you said, for almost 50 years, and clearly is not doing the job in terms of equal pay. Part of that, I'll tell you honestly, is that it doesn't have real great deterrence. And, you know, for companies, in terms of equal pay for equal work, I think a lot of companies really try to do the best that they can, but they're not going to spend a lot of time looking at their systems if whatever penalties hanging over their head is just a slap on the wrist. It's part of the reason why the Wisconsin law, actually, I thought, was very successful, because what it did was implement much stronger deterrence, which really had an impact on wages in the state.
And that was repealed last week, the 2009 Equal Pay Enforcement Act. Critics of that said that a couple things. You were mentioning what Senator Grossman said a little bit earlier, that it's his belief, and critics of the legislation, that the threat of lawsuits is putting a huge burden on businesses. And he says, Grossman, that is, that companies are being bombarded with false accusations of discrimination. Is that true?
No, it's not true. I mean, what's fascinating is that law came into place in 2009, and I'm not sure there was more than a handful of cases that were actually brought under that law. So, no, they weren't bombarded with false claims. But I will agree with him in one sense, although I think he mischaracterizes it. I think the potential penalties that companies could get under that law, so much stronger than what they could get under federal law, made a lot of really smart companies and smart managers say, look, this new requirement is here. Let's make sure we're up to speed, because I don't want to get caught in that quagmire. And so what you saw was that within a couple of years after that law being passed, Wisconsin went from number 36 to like number 25 in the country in terms of the wage gap. You know, that to me is really the only thing that can explain that, was because you literally had this kind of teachable moment with employers in Wisconsin. Because the law was passed, they did what they were supposed to, because, as I said, most folks are well-meaning and they want to avoid lawsuits. And they also want to be fair if they really know that they're being unjust. And they went through it and they did the right thing. And lo and behold, women's wages went up in Wisconsin. Mm. So, you know, progress. No wonder they repealed it.
And Lisa, was Wisconsin rare in having such a state law, or did other states have similar laws?
Have similar laws or some other kinds of programs. What I liked about the Wisconsin law was that it basically created another route in which a victim of pay discrimination could file her suit. And it gave a state route to file it rather than a federal route. And that particular route had much stronger penalties attached to it if indeed it was proven that wage discrimination occurred. And so, as I said, the deterrent effect there was much bigger than under the Equal Pay Act, which I got to tell you, for most companies, you know, it's just the cost of doing business. The Civil Rights Act of 1964 is capped at $300,000 for the biggest companies, and the Equal Pay Act is actually capped at just getting kind of back salary. There's no punitive damages. So if you get caught, you just pay her what you would have paid her anyway, but there's no harm, no foul. Whereas under the stricter Wisconsin law, which, as you said, has unfortunately been repealed, it actually made companies stop and think, and it made a real difference in women's salaries, which, by the way, was a real difference for all of Wisconsin, for Wisconsin communities and Wisconsin families, because when a woman isn't paid equally, it affects the whole family, the whole community dynamic.
Somewhere I read that it may be a loss of something like $4,000 a year to a family. Is that about right?
Yeah, I mean, that's a new stat to me, but it's not a figure that seems outlandish. I mean, it's you really can't overstate the importance not only of both a state and a federal government being a good model employer itself, but the importance of deterrence. I mean, I would love to think that you just have to give people carrots, give people the right training, give people the right incentives, and everybody will do the right thing. But most people and businesses are busy. They're going to do what they really have to do right now that affects the bottom line. So the thing about deterrence is that you actually make it affect the bottom line, and so then they get into line and offer the salaries that they're supposed to.
Linda Matz, our guest this hour, we're looking at equal pay and the gender gap, the AAUW, where she is Director of Public Policy and Government Relations, has just released a report, The Simple Truth About the Gender Pay Gap, 2012. And to put it in a nutshell, they say the pay gap is real. You can read the report at aauw.org, and we'll be welcoming phone calls. Our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Our email address, if you would like to use that, is talk@wpr.org, talk@wpr.org. Or you can use our Facebook page, too, and write your comments. That's the Kathleen Dent Show. So, that's the story. To your calls in a moment. I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We go to your phone calls now. Joel in Wausau, our first caller. Hi, Joel.
Hello. How are you both doing today?
Fine, Joel. How are you?
Great. I wanted to talk about the gender roles that you brought up about men believing we need to be breadwinners. I'm pretty deeply affected by that, and I think that there's a lot of things in our society that have ingrained that in men as young boys, and I don't think that justifies the difference in pay, but I do think that's a real fact of the problem. There's been times where I haven't had enough money for my family, or felt like I've had enough money to even attract a woman when I was younger. So, you know, those types of things are deep-seated in my mind. And I think of this documentary that was put out called Tough Guys, and it was spelled G-U-I-S-E, like disguise. And I think that we are all, men are, and women are both socialized to think they have to be something, you know, like we're put into this box.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess what excites me about this and this discussion and hearing your guest bring that up is that I think that we can begin to challenge those boxes that have been formed for us, and realize that, hey, we're all human, and though we might identify ourselves as men and women, we all deserve credit for our hard work and our sacrifices.
I think the idea of the male as the breadwinner is deeply, deeply ingrained. Don't you, Lisa? He makes a very valid point.
Oh, yeah, I know. I think that's very true. And so, you know, when we flip the coin and look at the other side, part of what we need to see there is the pressure that we put on boys and men, the expectations that especially, you know, in this economy, we found out couldn't always be met. We know that men lost jobs at a higher rate for most of this recession because of the kinds of jobs that were lost. Women tend to be losing them now because, you know, now we're digging into local governments and teachers and nurses. But the reality is, we put that kind of pressure on them. But it's really interesting to me that we still put that kind of pressure on them when two-thirds of the American families have both breadwinners, have both folks working, and could not survive if they didn't. So It's so interesting that stereotype and I guess that cultural, gold standard has lived this long despite the actual realities that people are living.
Thank you so much, Joel, for your call. Justin in La Crosse, hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I am just wondering with the pay gap, if I'm not sure what the statistics are, but I'm assuming with retail jobs, mostly those are worked by women, and if what role that plays in that gap, because those are typically lower paying jobs.
Yeah, Justin, that's actually a really good question, because we do know that one of the things or one of the reasons behind the pay gap is what we call occupational segregation. And that's the whole notion that the vast majority of women tend to work in a very small cluster of jobs, whether it's retail or teaching, nursing, secretarial work, those kinds of quote-unquote pink-collar jobs that we're familiar with. And so that does certainly apply to it. That does certainly make the gap part of the issue. But there are two things going on there. Number one, I certainly think that we need to look at some of the jobs that women have that are very important, but don't necessarily get paid what they're worth, like teachers and nurses. You know, Long Island did a study and found out that they were paying their new teachers less than they were paying their groundskeepers, right?
Really?
So it's when you do that, you see then that, again, there's a value judgment for not just men versus women, but whether you value the kind of work that women stereotypically do versus the kind that men stereotypically do. The other issue there that I would say is that you always want to compare apples to apples when you can. So AUW did that in a research study that we found, and that even 1 year out of college, when arguably folks are about as equal as they're going to be, probably not married, probably don't have kids, there's already a gap. And 10 years down the road, that gap more than doubles, even though women are more likely to get a graduate degree. Now, this is controlling for all those things you're talking about, that we say could affect it, experience, education, do you have children, all those things that stereotypically play, and we still see an unexplained gap, which is exactly what government auditors find on a regular basis, and the only thing we can think of that explains that quote-unquote unexplained gap is discrimination and stereotypes.
And let's be more specific about when this happens. You talk about this pay gap being smallest among younger workers, and then huge after 10 years out of college. Where does it start to change significantly, or is it kind of a percentage point every year thereafter, after graduation?
Yeah, it's pretty much a percentage point thereafter. I mean, when you think about it, you get your first salary, and then everything is based on that. You know, if you get a 5% or a 2% increase at work, it's based on the salary you currently have. Any benefits you have will be based on the salary you currently have. So it tends to snowball. It tends to compound in terms of building up over the years. So, yeah, we see that a lot. And that also, of course, means that it's one of the reasons why women are so often to be poor in their retirement years.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Justin, for the call. What do you imagine would happen if those traditionally female fields like teaching, like nursing, became more traditionally male fields? Do you think automatically we'd see a change in pay?
Well, yeah, I think we would see a change in pay. I don't know that it would always be a good change. We saw some of this in the former Soviet Union, Russia, where women began to predominate as doctors, as medical doctors, and not just like kind of the halves and halves that we have in the United States in terms of medical school graduates now, but like 70-80%. And what we actually saw was the wages went down. So again, there was a stereotype about what's women's work and how much we value it. The other thing that I will tell you that is really close to home and I thought was fascinating was that the government does obviously research on its own workforce to see, well, what's the pay gap amongst government workers, where obviously there's a very rigid classification system. In some places there are unions, which always help the pay gap. And they found, indeed, a much smaller pay gap between men and women. But one of the things that they attributed that smaller gap to was the fact that the federal government had a disproportionate number of men in administrative assistant positions.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Huh. So, you know, at the end of the day, what we see is, you know, we can kind of manipulate things back and forth, but there's still an issue there that we need to get to just about the value of women's work, because, you know, you don't want to say to people, don't become a teacher or a nurse or a secretary. We need teachers and nurses and secretaries. But are they being paid fairly for the comparable kinds of work that men do? You know, it's and sometimes it's really blatant. You'll find a social worker that's a parole officer, you know, making twice as much as a social worker that works in child protective services. Now, people might say that a parole officer, that's a little more dangerous job, but you talk to any child protective services worker going into those homes, and that's a pretty dangerous job, too.
It can be very dangerous.
Indeed. And so, but again, we there's a value judgment there for, again, the same kind of work, the same kind of skill set. But the women's stuff is valued less.
Yeah. So let's go back to D.C. for a moment, where we've got 91% of what men earned. You talked about men being administrative assistants. Is it also possible that we're looking, that the spotlight is on Washington, and if you're in Washington, you darn well better be careful about what you're paying men and women, or the eyes are upon you?
You know, that could be part of it, but I do believe that probably the biggest part of it is that in Washington we have a lot of federal workers, and so that automatically is going to close the pay gap. And then we also have a disproportionately high number of extraordinarily educated women who are here. And so as a result, we have this situation where, while the glass ceiling obviously is still there, there's probably more cracks in the ceiling in D.C. than in some other places. So, you know, that, I think, combined are really the issues in terms of why we have a smaller pay gap here in D.C.
Facebook message. We have several of them. Linda writes, I think women continue to lag in financial knowledge. We should equip ourselves with homework and knowledge prior to a job interview. Then upon offer to hire, we are better able to advocate and negotiate.
Yeah, you know, that's a great point. And I do really believe that one of the things women need to be able to do is to better negotiate for a good salary. You know, we tend to, when we're offered a job, pretty much take what we're offered. And men tend to say, how about $5,000 more or whatever. They negotiate. Although we also know, based on studies, is that while women might not be as likely to negotiate, they're much more likely to be penalized if they do negotiate. Because we all know what an aggressive woman is called in the workplace, and if it's not done in a way that somehow is received well, it could actually hurt you either in getting that job or getting the additional salary funds you were looking for. So it's a bit of a double-edged sword. Mm. It's definitely something women should know, and they should understand what their worth is compared to other people in their region for the kind of work that they do and the skills that they have. But it's got to be done right, because it can come back to haunt you.
So we need a class in how to negotiate. Can you give us any tips?
Yeah, you know, AEW actually has classes in how to negotiate.
Oh, you do?
Yeah, and we decided that we'd really start young. So we have something called Start Smart, which is a project where we go to college campuses across the country and talk to women about how to negotiate their salaries. And part of it is really, it's a step-by-step process, but part of it is really spending a fair amount of time figuring out what you're worth. You know, what kind of job are you going for? What's the median income for that kind of job in your area? How much experience do you have? What skills do you have? So you really can go in there armed and confident, knowing in this region, this job pays $42,000. And so I feel confident that I can negotiate to get close to that, because I'm armed with the information. So that's a big part of it. And it's something we do, yeah, around the country.
And women are likely to just sort of take what they're offered, because why?
Well, oftentimes it's we're just glad to have a job in this economy. That's a big part of it. Number two, it's just part of our, in many respects, part of our nature. You got to remember that discrimination follows you. So you may start your first job at $30,000 and not have known that the guy sitting next to you was making $35,000. When you go to your next job and they offer you $42,000, to you, that's a huge raise. That's $12,000.
Yes.
But you might not have known that actually what that job could pay is upwards of $48,000, right? So you get that big chunk of a raise, you get that big chunk of an increase, and you don't even necessarily think to say, well, I would like some more, because that discrimination follows you from job to job.
Mark in Green Bay. Hello, Mark.
Hi.
Hi.
Are there other countries that this equity is more is better, and what are they doing that makes it more equitable? Or is there any country where it is equitable?
Oh, that's a great question. You know, they do world surveys and compare the pay gap around the country, around the world. The United States tends to be maybe 20th or so in the world in terms of a pay gap. So we're by no means, are we the best one? There pretty much is a gap everywhere you go, but the places where you see a smaller gap tend to be some of those European countries that also have much broader social safety nets than we do, that have, you know, federal paid child care and paid sick leave and those kinds of stuff. So, you know, we're talking about Denmark and Sweden and so forth, Switzerland. So, you know, at the end of the day, we don't have anything to brag about, number one. But number two, we do have some good best practices to see if we had the will to try and improve this.
Thank you very much. Interesting question, Mark. Our guest this hour is Lisa Matz. We're talking about a new report just issued by AAUW, The Simple Truth About the Gender Pay Gap 2012, and she is Director of Public Policy and Government Relations at the American Association of University Women. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, and there are lines open for you right now. Our email is talk@WPR.org, or you can go to our Facebook page, which is the Kathleen Dunn Show. You were describing that situation, and I'm sure many women and men were identifying with this. You're sitting at work, and you're there, and you're working hard for a couple of years, and then you find out the guy next to you is making $5,000 more than you are. There have to be a lot of people who are pretty unhappy about that. That can eat away at you, too. That can make you go to bed at night thinking, this isn't fair.
Oh yeah, absolutely. It's many companies who really do pay attention to this and try and follow best practices find that because of their attention to issues in terms of pay, to make sure that things are fair, the morale of their employees is that much better. They stay longer, they work harder, they're more productive. So there's really all kinds of positives to it. But the other thing I would say is that a lot of times people don't know. And that's another big issue that we have to struggle with, is that it literally in some sectors of this country, for certain sectors of the workplace, it's completely legal for an employer to say, yes, this is how much you're making. Now, you are not allowed to talk about pay issues at work. You're not allowed to share your salary at work. And if you do, you will be fired.
Really? Oh, my goodness.
It absolutely is legal. That's exactly what happened to Lilly Ledbetter. That's part of why she did not know for 19 years, because she asked the question she could of her supervisor, but she could not talk to her colleagues. She was told that she was not allowed to talk to her colleagues. And she eventually found out by way of an anonymous note in her mailbox, but that person still remains anonymous to this day, because if Goodyear found out who it was, they'd fire them, and they could not be sued for doing so. It would be completely legal. So I always think that, you know, as Justice Brandeis said, sunlight's the best disinfectant. But we also have to make sure that we look at our employee handbooks to make sure that we aren't in an occupation where they can say those kinds of things to you. And usually the farther up the pay grade you go, the more likely it is they can have a gag order about talking about your pay.
And the Lilly Ledbetter Act didn't change that?
No. Not at all. I mean, that's one of the big misconceptions about the Lilly Ledbetter bill. In fact, I saw on Twitter that there were a fair amount of people from Wisconsin that thought maybe the Wisconsin law was repealed because Lilly Ledbetter took care of it. And that couldn't be farther from the truth. The Lilly Ledbetter bill essentially was a bill about the statute of limitations and when you could sue if you felt you were a victim of pay discrimination. But it didn't do anything in terms of why there's a gap, better deterrence, dealing with retaliation issues, none of that. So when I hear people say, you know, the Lilly Ledbetter Act made it possible for women to get equal pay for equal work, that's not what it did. If that were true, we should have been had to have an equal pay for a couple of years now. It literally just kept the courtroom doors open and put us to where we were before the Supreme Court's kind of ridiculous decision in that case. But now, with the Paycheck Fairness Act, that's kind of the next one in line.
Mm-hmm.
It would take care, it would look at all those things. It would look at data collection. It would look at better deterrence for employers in terms of what they did with their pay scales. It would deal with these retaliation issues. So we've come very close to passing it in Congress, but, close but no cigar.
Hmm. And is this different for public employees? That information, I assume, would be public.
Indeed, yes. Public employees, oftentimes it's public, if only in terms of a pay scale. You might not be able to look up a person's name, but you can see that, you know, a executive secretary three makes whatever. And unions, they tend to be public as well. Those are places where we see
yes.
much more transparency, and it's part of the reason it's part of the reason why there's more equity there, because it is transparent, because when people see that there's an issue, they work to address it. So, we would like to see a lot more transparency.
Marty, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off.
That's all right. And I would just say the other thing we'd like to see is some more work done with contracting. You know, the federal contractors make a lot of money. State contractors make a lot of money off our tax dollars. And they're supposed to follow civil rights guidelines. They're supposed to pay fairly. But we would like to make sure that they can't retaliate either. That if you're going to do business with the federal government, transparency is going to be your business too.
Marty in Milwaukee, hi.
Hi. Really interesting conversation, really good discussion. I guess I have a question, as having been a temporary victim of the last recession, partly due to salary. Does the fact that apples to apples, men and women doing the same kind of work, women are making less in a given situation, did that have any effect in sort of layoff proofing them during the last recession? Because you know it was cheaper, it was better for the employer to fire the more expensive labor.
Yeah, you know, that's a very intriguing thought. Most of the thought around what happened with the recession was that it really had a lot more to do with the sectors that were hit by the recession. So in other words, you know, right in the beginning, the sectors that were really just slammed hard were construction and manufacturing, those kinds of things that do tend to be male-dominated already. But now what we're seeing, especially now that the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act money has dried up and Congress can't pass a plate, let alone new legislation to give us new money to deal with the recession. As a result, part of what's happening is we're now digging into the marrow of things and laying off government workers, laying off hospital workers, first responders, the majority of those tend to be, and teachers, and the majority of those tend to be women. So there's certainly an economic argument to be made, but I think at the end of the day it was more about occupational segregation. I do want to note one thing, Kathleen, that I'm finding fascinating about this conversation.
Yes, they're all, I know what you're going to say.
Yeah,
yes.
Is that we've got lots of guys calling in.
I know.
And I'm completely thrilled to hear that. But, you know, it plays out what we already know at AEW, which is for every woman who's not getting a fair paycheck, there's some guy in her life who's mad about it.
Right.
Whether
right.
it's her husband or her son
right.
or her father or whoever who thinks it's not fair she's not getting a paycheck that she's worth.
Mm-hmm.
And that just points to what I said earlier, that it's really a family issue. I mean, we can call it a women's rights issue and talk about that as much as we want, but at the end of the day, if she's not bringing home a fair share of the bacon, it hurts everybody.
Right. And, you know, I think that Marty makes an interesting point, and to take it one step further, in a time where jobs are so fragile and there aren't that many of them and the economy is having a hard time rebounding, you have to be, as a female who's being paid less, a little scared to go to your boss and say, hey, I'd like a raise, right? Because you feel like you're so thankful to have a job.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. It's part of the reason, for instance, that we're really pushing to ensure that there is good enforcement and technical assistance at the federal level in terms of equal pay laws. Because at times like this, this is the last time that a worker, male or female, wants to be speaking out. about this kind of stuff, because
right,
they're just
right.
happy to have a job. But that means then that the enforcement and technical assistance stuff that comes from the feds needs to be even more directed and targeted, because we need them speaking up for us more than ever right now. So, you know, the White House has put together an equal pay enforcement task force. They have been working in an interagency kind of way between the Department of Justice and the Department of Labor, the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, to really do some great work in terms of refocusing priorities on equal pay, which unfortunately had been lost in the last administration. And we've seen some good results. We know that the Office of Federal Contract Compliance Programs, which is it's basically an office at the Department of Labor that ensures that all those folks doing business with the federal government that get all those lucrative contracts follow civil rights laws. We know that they've done pay equity reviews with 10,000 of them, which is affecting more than 4.3 million workers. That's a huge thing
to say
they've gone in and reviewed the policies and said that things seem to be in order, so that that many people can feel like, you know, things are copacetic. So, yeah, the government in this kind of time is really important, quite frankly.
Kathy in Price County, hi.
Hi. I was wondering if any work has been done on the fact that because women tend to get lower pay during their lifetime, you know, during their working career, they also get less Social Security, because your Social Security earnings are based on your, you know, your life earnings.
Right.
Oh, yeah. That's very, very true. You know, how Social Security works essentially is that when you retire, if you have enough Social Security credits, in other words, you've worked long enough in the workplace, the paid labor force, to get those credits, you are entitled to 100% of your own benefits. Or if you're married, you can get 50% of your spouse's benefits, whichever is greater. For most women, 50% of their spouse's benefits are more than 100% of their own.
Oh, my, there's a statement. Isn't that something?
Indeed. So, you know, that happens a lot. As Lily Ledbetter will tell you about that all day long. You know, she's in her 70s. Her husband has passed away, so she immediately lost his aspect of his Social Security income, because if she was getting 50% of his, he had 100% of his. So basically they were running a household on 150% of his Social Security benefits. And then when he passed away, as a widow, her benefits go up, but she loses his entirely. So hers went up to 75%, but she lost his. So you can see the household income was immediately cut in half. And so the fact that we live longer than men on average, sorry guys, but that's the truth, the fact that we live longer than men means that we're so much more likely to live in poverty. You know, we have more chronic diseases, so we take more prescription drugs. They're expensive. There's all kinds of reasons. And anybody out there taking care of elderly parents can tell you exactly what I'm talking about.
Kathy, thanks for the call. More phone calls in a moment. The Simple Truth About the Gender Pay Gap, 2012 report just issued by the American Association of University Women. Lisa Matz, who's Director of Public Policy and Government Relations at that organization, is our guest this hour. And we have a line open if you'd like to join us, 800-486-8655. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hour number two of our program. We are going to celebrate Earth Day just a little early. It's actually on Sunday. Tia Nelson will join us, and Tia has been in the environmental field like father, like daughter for a number of years. We have a lot to talk about with her. She's done environmental issues all over the globe and has been centered here in Wisconsin for quite some time. So we'll look at public lands. We'll look at resources. We'll look at where we have come on environmental issues since the first Earth Day, which was started by her father, Senator Gaylord Nelson, back in 1970. More phone calls now on equal pay. Mohammed in Oshkosh. Hi.
Good morning, ladies. This is more of a comment than really saying anything about the laws or the situations are there, but I worked in the 80s, and I had to deal with labor laws and in the personnel management and figure out things out for the workers. And what I found was that depending on the job for men or women, the pay was exactly the same if a person is doing the same job. doctors, teachers, any kind of pay, any kind of job. Women, it was a law. I mean, I don't know if it is still or not, but I just, when I started hearing about this pay gap lately, it just kind of intrigued me to bring this up, and I talked to some people about it, and we were, laughing in the fact that, oh my God, you know, here we are in the richest country in the world, supposedly, and there's this gap between men and women, and you hear all the negative stuff about Saudi Arabia, and it is part of the law, that men and women get paid equal for the same jobs. Just thought bring this up.
Lisa.
Yeah, obviously, the law is that women are supposed to be paid equal pay for equal work as a man does. And that has been the law since 1963. But just because it's been the law doesn't mean that people have followed it. Mohammed, I want to congratulate you. If you were working at a workplace where you could see on a regular basis that the way they implemented their wages, that everybody was being paid fairly and getting fair raises and such, that's a wonderful thing. But the reality is we have all kinds of laws in this country that people don't follow the way they should, whether it's speeding or or paying people fairly. And at the end of the day, some of that has to do with enforcement. People are much more likely to take the risk of getting caught speeding when they just have to worry about seeing a police car. But you'll notice that when they put up photo enforcement, and in other words, they're guaranteed to be caught, everybody slows down. It's the same thing with equal pay, and that's what was going on in Wisconsin, actually. Y'all had a very strong law, and so everybody slowed down. But now they've taken that away, and I worry what's going to happen to women's pay in Wisconsin.
Mohammed, thank you. Sarah in Zion, Illinois. Hi.
Hi, thank you. I'm wondering, when you're talking about people who do the exact same position, and I'm wondering if minority men have the same reduced wage for the exact same position.
Okay.
That's an excellent question, and it's true. Yeah. I mean, if we think about white men and Asian men kind of being at the top of the pay hierarchy, what we see then is that women make less and men of color make less. But what's interesting in there is that we still see Latino men making more than Latinas. We still see African American men making more than African American women. So the gap is still there, and it's part of the reason why wages are covered under the Civil Rights Law of 1964, because you can be discriminated for wages based on race, ethnicity, gender, so forth. But we do find it. So in that sense, it's an equal opportunity discrimination, unfortunately.
I found this interesting that the pay gap is the smallest for Asian American women. Weekly median income, 88% of the weekly median income for white men.
Yeah, and that fascinates me too, and there's some good explanations for that. Number one, it has to do with education and how much education they have. Number two, it also has to do with the kind of work that they're doing. And we do know that for women who go into more male-dominated fields, until it tips the scales, as we talked about earlier, and becomes female-dominated, but women who go into traditionally male-dominated fields will make more than women in other more pink-collar kinds of occupations. And one of the things we see with Asian women is a lot more of them going into the STEM fields, science, technology, engineering, and
right.
math,
mm-hmm.
going into IT and so forth. And those are jobs that pay well. Now, we're still going to see a gap there. They're still likely to be paid less than the men in that field, but they will do quite well in terms of their salary.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Sarah. Scott in La Crosse. Hello, Scott.
Hello, Kathleen.
Hi.
Yet another guy talking about this issue. but what I wanted to ask about is, since we're talking about something that a lot of factors could be at work, at play in, I remember an article a few years back, or a couple years back, why jerks move to the top. And the theory was this, or the proposal was this. Let's say you're a manager and you've got two people who are equally qualified for the same job. And one of these people, if you don't give the job to, they're going to be a real pain for the foreseeable future just because they're that kind of person. Whereas the other person, you say, I'm sorry, you didn't get it this round, but next time, better luck, and maybe everything. And that person goes, oh, yeah, I'll be okay with that, and I'll go along and do my job. Is it just possible that more guys are jerks?
I'm sure that everybody else is giggling out there, too.
Oh, we can always count on Scott for something that's good. Lisa.
Well, you know, I certainly think that men are more aggressive in the workplace in a lot of situations, especially when it comes to negotiating for pay, number one, and, you know, kind of going after things that will make them more money, whether it's a promotion or training or whatever. But at the end of the day, I also think that we're still making decisions based on cultural stereotypes, because when women do that, we in some respects can be actually penalized for. We're seen as too aggressive, and that's not attractive, you know. So in some respects, you just wish the culture would make up its mind. Do you want women to you know, be more like men in order to get ahead, or are you actually going to value us for our unique characteristics and still value us the same? And that decision has not yet been made culturally, and as a result, we still end up with these pay gaps. You know, it's interesting. A lot of this stuff will flow over into the conversation about women running for office, because we're always trying to get more women to run for office. And one of the things we find out with women running for office is that they need to be asked. They need to be encouraged. You know, they need to hear it 7 to 10 times before they even think about it. Whereas a man will not only think about it himself, but will run maybe when he shouldn't in terms of the kind of experience that he's got and his track record. So they're just, you know, there are different ways that we socialize the gender roles, and men have an overt confidence that, you know, women, that some women we're still working towards.
We have to say goodbye. Thank you, Lisa. Thanks for all your expertise.
Thank you.
Lisa Matz, Director of Public Policy and Government Relations at the American Association of University Women. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing the show. Thanks to our new producer, Brett Jaspers, for on-air production here in our studios in downtown Milwaukee. We'll return following the news.